Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. This week's podcast is sponsored by Clover and Bee. Clover and Bee wax wraps are an eco-friendly alternative to single-use plastics, made using organic food-grade materials and products with our own in-house designs. With just a little warmth from your hands, they will easily mould around fruits, vegetables, snacks and sandwiches, as well as bowls and dishes, and will keep your food fresh for longer. Lasting approximately a year, they are easily cleaned using cool water and a little dish soap. At the end of their use, they can be re-waxed, composted, roused in strips as a chemical-free fire starter for log burners and barbecues. I've been extremely lucky to be able to use the Clover and Bee beeswax wraps, and my favourite thing is that I can chop up an onion, chop up an avocado, chop up a pepper, and I don't need to worry about food waste, and it's absolutely brilliant. I also really hate using cling film, and this has just been amazing so that I can keep things wrapped, keep things fresh, not have to worry about the environmental impact, and also my fridge looks so pretty. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Deirdre Redden, who is an eating disorder and parent coach. Deirdre works with parents whose loved one has an eating disorder to support them in supporting their loved one. This week we have a specific focus on Christmas, as we know this can be a challenging time for both people with eating disorders and their loved ones. I really hope that you find comfort and support in this episode and have a very Merry Christmas.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
Yeah, I'm not bad, thank you. I'm very excited because I think I saw that you had your workshop yesterday.
Yes.
So it feels like you will have spoken a lot about this topic yesterday. So I guess to get us started, do you want to explain who you are, what you do, and how you got there?
Sure, yeah. So I'm Deirdre Redden. I'm one half of Supported Families based here in Ireland. And I am a parent coach and mentor. So once upon a time, I used to be a banker. And my daughter developed an eating disorder as a teenager. And when she was unwell, I spent a lot of time learning about eating disorders and understanding how best to support her on her journey. And then thankfully she got well and she's living her life now. But I guess I still remembered how lonely and isolating and tough it is as a parent. So I left banking, retrained as a coach, retrained in eating disorders. And now I work one-to-one with parents, helping them to help their loved ones, really, and kind of teaching them the skills and helping them to look after themselves, because having an eating disorder in the family has a significant impact on everybody. So I work one-to-one, and then I work on online with groups with a colleague, Susanna Gajevich, and we're Supported Families.
Yeah, amazing. I think like it's such important work that you're doing, because I think, like you said, a lot of the time families are forgotten about. And I think the really important thing is, from my personal experience, and I'm not saying this is going to be the case across the board, but when I had an eating disorder the first time around, when my family got involved, the way that they were treated was very much like, this is your fault and you're the ones to blame, therefore you've got to sort this out. And you know, that really affected my mum and dad, because they were like, well, what have we done to you know, put her in this position? And it made them angry, and they kind of stepped back from wanting to support because they were being told off. But then equally this time around, you know, I'm 26, so my parents, I don't live at home anymore. Like, my mum and dad are an hour and a half away. So having support for families, I think, is so important, because when you're an adult or classed as an adult by the NHS or whatever, you don't then get to bring your family in, which I think can be really difficult, because then you just feel quite lonely for the person that's got the eating disorder, but equally the family have like no idea what's going on.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's shocking, really, to think that that was sort of the accepted practice a number of years ago, that, you know, it was the family that were at fault. And thankfully, science has moved on, and the evidence has moved on now. And as you know yourself, Anna, it's just, it's so many different things that come together to create or so that somebody develops an eating disorder. Families absolutely do not cause eating disorders. And yet they feel so much pain. And, you know, for a long time, they might be in denial. They feel a lot of guilt. They feel, what have I done to cause this? They haven't. So, you know, there is clinical research to suggest that the rates of anxiety and depression in parents who have a loved one with an eating disorder is extremely high. So there's an impact on everybody. But even apart from all of that, the stat I tend to use is, there are 168 hours in the week, and if your loved one is having support on an outpatient basis, perhaps they spend an hour a week with the therapist, maybe 2 hours, and half an hour with the dietitian. It leaves a lot of hours at home with the parent, and parents are so impacted because they lose their confidence. They feel that their parenting skills aren't working, and they feel like they're walking on eggshells all the time because the eating disorder behaviours are so difficult. So it's kind of not rocket science in a way, but, you know, educating and supporting parents so that they can get their confidence back and they can learn how to support their loved one. It can make such a difference. And again, the evidence is there. It's improved outcomes for everybody. And it's even more cost effective in a way, because, you know, if somebody needs a lot of professional help, they need less when they're getting that, when the professional help is supplemented by parents at home who know what they're doing. And I guess I'm also really passionate about this age limit piece, you know. So you don't become an adult the day you wake up on your 18th birthday. You haven't changed from the day you were 17 the day before. And nobody, I firmly believe and passionately believe, that nobody can recover from an eating disorder on their own. It does take a lot of support. I think you have to completely preserve the client therapist confidentiality boundary, but a lot of the time parents just don't understand that the words they're using or their behaviors are just really triggering or causing anxiety for their loved one. So sometimes it can be really simple things that can really, really help, and even learning how to kind of manage their own emotions, all things that are kind of good parenting tips anyway, I think, but it can make a significant difference to the loved one and to the parents.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about, like, you don't become an adult, you know, the day that you turn 18 after you're 17 the day before, because I think from my experience of having an eating disorder through those teenage years and then the transition into adulthood, that really impacted me even now in becoming an adult, and only now that I'm going through therapy and, you know, really going to the depth of my eating disorder and what it's given to me, am I thinking, yeah, I have been, you know, really dependent on my parents and my partner in a very childlike way. And it's only now that I'm letting go of the eating disorder that I'm kind of emerge, you know, they talk about emerging adulthood and stuff, but I do feel like I'm like finding out who Hannah is and who Hannah is as an adult. So I think to just turn around and say, now that you're 18, you make the decisions. Well, now that you're 18, that doesn't mean that the eating disorder's gone and isn't affecting your judgment or your decision making anymore. So it's, yeah, it seems really strange that we would just say, right, off you go, you know, because I think that was the thing I noticed the most was when I was 14, it was very much like, you're in eating disorder treatment and you're here, and you didn't really have a choice as to whether you stayed or not. Like, it was very much, I did end up leaving in the end, but I had to get my parents' permission to do that. However, when I was more recently and I didn't want to go anymore, I was just like, no, I'm not turning up. And they were like, cool, see you later. And I think it is because I was an adult, I could make that decision for myself. But it definitely wasn't, you know, the right decision.
No. And then it's really hard too for parents, because they're cut out, you know, so the treatment team won't involve them. And like, they're the people on the ground. And even when you're not living at home, Hannah, like you know, you still have a lot of contact with your parents. And, you know, there's so much we can do to support our loved ones over the phone or whatever, you know, even if we're not there with them. And I think one of the biggest challenges for parents too is then letting go. So, you know, as you say, like, part of the recovery process is finding you and helping you to flourish and enhancing your sort of sense of self. And parents who have been walking on eggshells, they can find it really hard to know when to step back, because a lot of eating disorder recovery and treatment is about empowering the person to look after themselves, I suppose, and kind of find the tools in their toolbox to do that. So for parents, it can be really hard to know when is the point to step back.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think all of this is so difficult because, I mean, nobody gives you a kind of guidebook. I suppose you can buy guidebooks on parenting and you can buy guidebooks on parenting or somebody with an eating disorder, but realistically, you know, the books are only a guide. But I think when your child or your loved one has an eating disorder, it's, you know, wow, what on earth do I do here? And I'm just thinking, you know, from your perspective, you've spoken a little bit about like guilt and shame and things like that. And I think this may not be true for all parents, but I know for my mum, it was very much, I am her mum and I've always been able to fix her when she's broken. So, you know, she's cut her knee, I'll wipe her, wipe the blood off and I'll get her a plaster, or she's, I don't know, broken up with her boyfriend, I'll buy the ice cream and, you know, we'll watch a sad movie together and she'll be okay soon. With the eating disorder, my mum couldn't fix it, and she, it took her so like years to accept the fact that yes, she could be there to hold my hand and to, you know, be beside me, but ultimately, no matter how hard she tried, whether she tried to guilt trip me or tell me about the future or tell me about things that could or won't happen because of the eating disorder, until that switch flicked in my brain, she just kind of had to sit and wait. And so I guess for parents that are listening, that are feeling that guilt and shame and like, I've just got to fix my child, it's down to me and it's my fault, what would you say to them?
So a couple of things, I guess. So I firmly believe the parents are the expert on their child. So they play a role alongside the treatment team, you know, no matter what age the child is. So you do know your child and don't ever lose sight of that. Same way, you know, trust your gut if you feel there's something wrong. Like, we can't stress enough how important it is to get early intervention. So, you know, if you feel there's something wrong, get it checked out, and if you're wrong, what have you lost? Nothing. But it's worth it because, as we both know, they're not pleasant illnesses, and you know, if you can do anything to stop the track or make the journey shorter, I couldn't encourage that enough. So as parents, I guess, you know, we just have to keep planting the seed is the expression we always use. So when our loved one is over 18 and we can't make them go into treatment, we can just keep planting the seed and keep talking to them or keep envisioning for them the life that they can have without their eating disorder and help them to paint the picture of what life would be like without it. And it's really hard as a parent, and particularly mums, I think, you know, well, as parents, we're problem solvers. That's what we are. We want to fix problems. So exactly as you've said, Hannah, about, you know, when you fall over and you need a band-aid on your knee, that's what parents do. They do all that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, you can't. And the one thing you want to do is fix it, but you can't. And there are great animal metaphors that I use in my work that came from the New Maudsley Hospital. And I was definitely a kangaroo. So, you know, where you put your loved one in your pouch and you want to make it all go away and you want to solve everything for them. But again, back to the empowering theme, you know, you're not allowing the person to flourish and grow and figure things out for themselves. So you have to learn to kind of just be the dolphin and swim alongside them and put them on your back sometimes and nudge them forward and all that kind of thing. So I think for parents, just understanding, the more you can understand what an eating disorder is and what it isn't, and recognize that, yes, there is so much you can do from the sidelines. There's so much support and gentle encouragement that you can give someone. But this is just one thing that you can't make it go away, unfortunately, much and all as you might like to. But that does not mean that you can't help. Of course you can. So parents, I think, need to kind of learn to kind of forgive themselves. So self-compassion is really, really.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Important, because it's not their fault. They didn't cause it. No more than the individual, sorry, didn't cause it either.
Yeah, I love those animal analogies. Mm. I was just thinking about my own parents, and my dad was definitely, is it an emu?
No, the ostrich is the
ostrich.
One
that, yeah. That's it. As you were talking, I was trying to think. I was like, I know it's a big bird, but I can't think. My dad was definitely an ostrich, and then I think my mum had like signs of a Jack Russell, but then also partially signs of the kangaroo. But they are definitely now dolphins, so that's really lovely. But yeah, I think those analogies are really great, and I think they can help the parent to really try and think about where they're at, and you know, are they doing the best that they can to support their loved one? And I think that can be really difficult in itself, because you know, one day the person could need one form of support and form of encouragement, and the next day it may look totally different. And I think that's when you said about forgiving yourself there as a parent, or somebody that's supporting someone with an eating disorder. I think that is a really important place to do that, in knowing that you probably are going to make mistakes in terms of how you are around your loved one or how you support them. But ultimately, again, that isn't your fault, because the eating disorder will grasp onto anything it possibly can in order to try and separate you from your loved one. And so if if the eating disorder picks up on something, that they can be like, oh, you know, that's something that we can make out is wrong, it will do. And I think that can be so difficult. So I think what I've always tried to say is, rather than kind of, you know, if something worked on Monday, don't assume it's going to work on Tuesday. Ask the person on Tuesday, how can I support you today? And it can get tiresome, and sometimes they might not even know. But I think that approach, it kind of opens the conversation up more, rather than just assuming something's going to work and then an explosion when it doesn't.
And even I totally agree. And even the converse of that sometimes is true, you know. So sometimes we can almost make things too easy, or we don't quite, you know, we put limits on things as parents. So we feel, oh my goodness, that just would be too difficult for our loved one to do. And we don't kind of create the opportunity for the loved one to try. Mm-hmm. Because again, you know, back to being the kangaroo. And I think the important thing about parenting styles is their styles, and we can be lots of different ones. We're not one particular animal. But sometimes we can just put limits that we shouldn't put in place. And again, coming from, you know, a position of fear as well. And sometimes our loved ones are stronger and are able to kind of push themselves forward a little bit more. And the analogy I often use as well with parents, Hannah, is, and with individuals that I work with too, who are suffering, like I just say, treat it all like an experiment, you know, like it really is, you know, you just try it. And I think sometimes we can put so much pressure on ourselves, but you know, I often say to people, go out there, put that white coat on and pretend you're a scientist and just try stuff. you know, what's the worst that can happen? And I think exactly as you've said, if you can keep the lines of communication open, every parent I've worked with would say, oh, but we have a great relationship with our child. And they do. Of course they do. So once we can keep the lines of communication open and we can treat it as an experiment, we try it. And what did we learn? What worked? What didn't? So kind of taking them. And, you know, I know we're going to talk about Christmas and that's a very good example of that. But just taking the pressure off can be really, really helpful as well. Because we know, you know, as parents, back to kind of all the feelings that parents feel, the more anxiety we experience, the more stressed we are, the more worried we are. And these are all completely understandable emotions when you have a loved one with an eating disorder. The more that will feed onto our loved one. So, you know, it's emotional dysregulation rather than emotional regulation. So our anxiety, our stress is just going to make our loved one feel even more anxiety because they're experiencing a lot of anxiety anyway. So it's really important that we mind ourselves and we're compassionate to ourselves as well as our loved one. So I think if you can kind of make it an experiment and just give it a go rather than feeling, oh, you know, kind of like it's success or failure, that's just a lot of pressure when every day can be different, exactly as you've said.
Yeah, and I like to see it as well, and this may be a weird way of looking at it, but if ultimately I think that one of the really important things of eating disorder recovery is finding out what someone's triggers are and what's impacting them, and therefore working with that on, you know, how can we get you better so that these things aren't triggers anymore. So ultimately, okay, if something does go wrong, it's actually quite a good thing to find out. And also, you know, if someone makes a comment that isn't taken the right way, or something, you know, you give them something to eat and they freak out about it or something, that's then something that they can work on, and they can work on thinking, why did that comment affect me so much? Or, you know, why is that food one I find really difficult? So yes, in the moment it will be hard, but ultimately recovery from an eating disorder is hard, and finding those difficult bits quicker means that you're probably going to see your loved one get out of it quicker as well. And I think being compassionate to yourself is really important. I think that's one thing that I have tried to speak about loads on the podcast is, you know, ultimately your loved one has an eating disorder, yes, but life is still going on around you, and making sure that you stay connected with your friends and you stay doing things that you enjoy, whilst it may feel selfish at the time, you know, that then allows you to have a little break, let off some steam, come back and be re-energized, then help somebody. Because I think so quickly people burn out when they're supporting their loved ones, and then little things get more annoying, arguments happen so much more often, you're just so tired and you've not got the capacity to support. So really making sure that there's time for you as well as time for your loved one, I think is so important.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, as I always say, you're role modeling self-care too, mm-hmm. because for the person who has an eating disorder, they're not taking care of themselves because they can't, because they're sick. So it's really important that we as parents role model that it's actually okay to mind yourself and take care of yourself. And back to your point earlier, like the speed bumps on the road to recovery are so important, because they tell us maybe what part or what's missing from the toolbox, or what's not there yet, you know. So are the tools in the toolbox all polished and shining and ready to go, or is there something else that's needed? So yeah, we have to embrace the speed bumps. I think they're so mm-hmm. so important.
Yeah, and talking of speed bumps, I think mm-hmm. Christmas can present a lot of speed bumps. So I wanted to really chat to you just broadly about supporting someone with an eating disorder to start with, and obviously our focus this week is about Christmas, which I think for many people is a big stress. I think for people with an eating disorder, for people supporting somebody with an eating disorder, on both sides, it can be a stress in terms of food, body image, family occasions, like all a whole host of different things. So I wanted to get your sort of input on supporting somebody with an eating disorder at Christmas. So from your perspective, how would you advise somebody to go about sort of I don't want to say tackling, because I don't want to make it sound like it should be a horrific time, because it shouldn't, but I think it can feel like a challenge heading into Christmas. So how would you support somebody in making that easier?
Planning would be would be my absolute number one. And I think, you know, when you're supporting somebody with a somebody with an eating disorder anyway, I think it's always good to have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. So if you're eating out, it's always good to have a plan B. So I think plan ahead. You know, I think an eating disorder is an unwelcome intruder at Christmas time. They don't take holidays, unfortunately, so eating disorders tend to be still there at Christmas. So sometimes parents, I think, or family members can sometimes think, oh, it's Christmas, it'll all be fine. And it's a really, really difficult time, as you've said, because, you know, all the food ads on TV, or sorry, all the Christmas ads on TV, so many of them are around food, you know, kind of pushing food, pushing indulgence. And then you flip over into the 1st of January and it's all about punishing yourself for all the indulgence. So kind of pre and post Christmas is really difficult for somebody with an eating disorder. So I think planning ahead, again, talking to your loved one, asking, you know, what are their stressors? What are the things that they're most concerned about? Recognizing that it probably won't be the same as previous Christmases if it's your first Christmas with an eating disorder in the house. But that doesn't mean it won't be a good occasion, or there won't be joyful moments. It won't be less than. But I think if you can reduce the stress, because again, somebody who has an eating disorder experiences a lot of anxiety, as we know. So if you can kind of find ways to plan ahead, talk about the day itself, talk about the events leading up to Christmas. Are there family gatherings? Is it too much for your loved one to attend those this year? Making reasonable adjustments, you know, around family gatherings, around food, I think is really, really important. And talking about what the plans are for Christmas Day. Are you going to eat in your own house? Are you going to a relative's house? What's the most appropriate thing for your loved one to do? So your loved one has to come first, really, in terms of Christmas itself. So it can be really, really helpful to have those conversations. Plan the day, you know. So I think sometimes people with eating disorders can get totally overwhelmed at the idea of Christmas, and it feels like such a big event. So a tip I heard once is even just to sit down and map out the days in the year and show that actually it is only a very, very small part of the year, and we will get through it. So even planning the day, making sure that there are non-food activities in the day, creating new traditions, you know, maybe drive around and see the Christmas lights in other houses.
I do that every year.
Ah, there you go. So doing something different that's not related to food, and planning the day, like planning the meal itself. So kind of it can be helpful for somebody who has an eating disorder to know what's coming up, you know, so kind of agree the menu, agreeing the timing. So making sure that if somebody's following a meal plan, that they kind of eat at generally the same time, that they have their snacks, that it's not being used as an excuse to not eat the day before because they'd be eating so much on the day. And even things like planning, so planning the meal, planning who'll be there, planning who your loved one sits beside. So again, you know, they will generally have like a key support person, often their mum. So making sure that the person sits, you know, that their key support person sits beside them. If there are a number of people who don't really understand what's going on, making sure that there's a code word or a signal between the individual and their parent so that they can be removed or distracted, or, you know, anything that can help can be just so important. For them, I would say the really important thing, Hannah, is just kind of pare it down, like reduce the fuss, and ease the pressure. Like, it's, you know, it's challenging for everybody, so just try and have compassion for you and for your loved one. I think that's important.
Yeah. It's so funny you said about the code word, because there's I have one particular family member who is very difficult to be around, and we went to see them last Christmas, and me and my mum had like a signal, and I used it several times, but it was really good because it meant that like my mum knew like, okay, she needs me to change the conversation right now, and that was really supportive, and it made me feel, you know, that I had somebody that was there for me and I could get through it, because it wasn't just me kind of like spiralizing my own head. And I think that, you know, having a plan is really, really good, you know, planning of timings so that that takes away that anxiety, planning of, you know, other activities, you know, not necessarily like at 2 p.m. we're going to do this, at 3 p.m. we're going to do this, but sort of, you know, if you've had the meal and someone feels uncomfortable, to know like, oh, you know, we said that we could potentially play a game or whatever, we had these things to do, because it might be that you're fine, but it might be that you do need some support. But I just wanted to question something that you said, because I think one mistake I've made in the past is I have, one, lied about how comfortable I am about things in order for the eating disorder to get its own way. And two, I think my parents were so concerned, because I think when you said about TV adverts, it's what made me think it. When you see on the TV Christmas is this perfect time where everybody's happy.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Everybody's smiling. And like you said, eating disorders don't go on holiday. And it can be a very stressful time. And so I think my parents' approach before was just, okay, we're going to have a conversation. And whatever Hannah feels is best, that's what we're going to do. But then that meant that the eating disorder one. So the meal that I had was very restrictive. The pudding that I had was very restrictive. Like I wasn't really supporting myself in recovery. And so I wanted to ask you, like, how does a parent determine what a reasonable adjustment is? Because it could be that somebody is just trying to get away with having, you know, restrictive eating or whatever, but it could also be that that's where they feel comfortable.
Tricky. It's a tricky one. I suppose the more parents learn and understand about the eating disorder, and that's why support from parents is so, so important. Mm-hmm. The more you can kind of recognize, well, is this Hannah or is it the eating disorder? And you kind of know when to push a little bit more. I think if somebody is following a meal plan, or, you know, just something that's kind of a little bit structured, it can be helpful to kind of stay aligned with that, if you know what I mean. So you're kind of you're still eating broadly the same things, but they might be sort of have more of a Christmas. I think we shouldn't be ditching the Christmas dinner, sorry. I think we should be adjusting where you can. And I think the other key thing about planning is like, do it early, have the conversations early, involve the treatment team if you need to. So, you know, getting support, like, so one of the things I did and one of the things I encourage my parents that I work with now to do is contact the dietitian if you've questions, or, you know, if you've concerns. And again, if your loved one is over 18, the dietitian may not reply, but that actually doesn't matter, you know. So if you're concerned that, exactly the example you've just given, Hannah, that, you know, the eating disorder is taking control and determining what will and won't be eaten, no harm to just run that by the dietitian. And the dietitian then can raise it in the session with the individual. So again, that's why parents are such an important part of the treatment team, because they can come at things from different angles because they see things at home. So I think planning ahead, getting the support of the treatment team, can be really, really helpful. And maybe too, because again, we've talked about anxiety, and maybe too, it could be that you have a plan A and a plan B, you know, so maybe the plan A is if the person is feeling comfortable, they'll try X and Y. And then if the day is overwhelming, maybe we go to a plan B. Maybe they eat the food, but they eat the food in another room with their kind of key support person. So they're away from if the talk isn't helpful or something like that. So I think it's being flexible and adjusting. But it is tricky. But I think really important too, though, back to kind of taking the pressure off ourselves, it is one day. The wheels won't come off. If somebody's recovering, it's important that we pick up again the next day. I think that's really, really important as well. And I hope that answers it.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think it's just sometimes it can be a bit confusing of like, you know, make adjustments. How far do I go with those adjustments? So that was a really nice answer. Thank you to clear that up. I think one thing that's just going through my mind, and I don't really know where I'm going with this, but it might be a concern that somebody else is having. So I, last Christmas, was very much in the depth of my eating disorder. And so whilst I was concerned about Christmas, I was in the depth of my eating disorder. So I was so engrossed in the behaviours and so secretive about it that I got away with, you know, whatever, because at the time, you know, it was kind of obvious that I was struggling, but I wasn't in recovery. I wasn't getting support for it. This Christmas almost feels more terrifying, because this Christmas I am in recovery. This Christmas I have started to gain weight and I'm on a meal plan. And I think it's really strange how this Christmas is so much more terrifying, because I am getting better, but equally it's almost like last year I was engaging in the eating disorder and getting away with it. This year I know that, like, if I'm offered a mince pie, everyone's gonna be like, oh, if I say no to a mince pie, or if I don't want to have a certain thing. So I guess in those situations of when everybody is having something to eat and your loved one is struggling, how would you approach that to support them, I guess, without making it really obvious?
Yeah. So there's kind of two sides to that, Hannah, and we had our parent support group last night. We were talking about this, that sometimes, and I said it earlier, you know, we can inadvertently put limits on our loved ones too. So clearly, if somebody is in recovery, following a meal plan, and declines food or turns down food that they're offered, the one thing you don't do is start turning into a rhino and kind of badgering the person. Sorry, they're mixed metaphors there now, but, you know, in terms of why aren't you eating that, you know, you need to eat it, because in the moment, all you're doing is making the individual feel a lot more anxious. And if there are other people there, incredibly uncomfortable. So I think, again, you know, there is, parents and family members all have their own strengths, and there are certain members, family members, who are better placed to kind of have a conversation with an individual later, not around food, and just kind of check in, find out how they're doing. Is there anything they need for support on, or, you know, asking them how they're feeling rather than making it all about food. And I read something as well about, you can have a card system, like green, red and yellow, and you can leave a card outside your door depending on how you're feeling, for the person themselves. So I think no pressure doesn't mean we don't check in. It doesn't mean that we don't gently encourage and say, look, you agreed that you were going to try and eat X, Y, and Z today. Can I help you? What can I do? So the timing of that is really, really, really important. And similarly, I think for somebody who's in recovery, they're not going to ask to try foods, you know. So sometimes I think, and again, it depends on the nature of the eating disorder, clearly, but even just kind of leaving food available, you know. So for example, maybe somebody who's doing well in their recovery might actually like to try a chocolate, but they're not actually going to say, can I please have a chocolate? Because it's just too hard. You know, the eating disorder is going to be very strong. But if it was there, maybe they might. And again, in that situation, the worst thing parents and family members can do is say, oh my goodness, that's wonderful you've had a chocolate, because that just makes the person feel worse, you know. So if we can just try and have compassion for us, ourselves, and for our loved one, and just dial down the pressure, I think. Mm. So important that we don't let unhelpful behaviors creep back in, Hannah, to your point. So we remain gently encouraging and supportive, and gently challenging is an expression I use all the time, but it is important that we do that, but we pick our moment as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I was smirking so much as you were chatting, because I was just like, oh, I've had all of these situations, and they all, you know, you like curdle inside. But I think you're so right in that. And just to add on a little bit to what you were saying, you know, if I found personally, I'm in a position now where it may be that somebody offers me something, and in the moment, I'm like, oh my God, I can't do that. Like, that's so spontaneous. I didn't plan for that, what have you. And I may say, oh, I'm okay, thank you. However, after a little bit of reflection and a little bit of time, I then may think, actually, I might fancy that, and then I might go and get one and just, you know, have it maybe on my own, or I might bring it in or whatever. And I think there, like, what I find really helpful is for, you know, somebody to, like you say, not make a big deal of it. So if I then walked in and they were like, oh, well, you said you didn't want one earlier, or like, oh my God, you're having one now, it's like, oh, like, please don't make this a big deal. Like, I just want to be as normal as the person sat next to me. You know, you didn't make a big deal when they ate the mince pie, so why is it now a big deal for me? But one thing I do remember, like every Christmas when I was little, my grandma used to get M&S vanilla pod custard. It is the best custard in the whole entire world. But for years, I wouldn't have it. And I, you know, at Christmas, I wouldn't have dessert when we went round to their house for Christmas dinner. But every year she'd keep buying it, like, you know, just in case. And I remember one year she got it out and I just poured a little bit on, and the smile on her face, she didn't say anything, but she was absolutely beaming. And I just thought that for me was the perfect response, because I knew how much it meant to her that I'd had it, but she didn't kind of say, oh my God, you've not had it for years and now you're having it. Because I think if she'd have said that, it would have been like, oh my God, I haven't had it for years. And, you know, yeah, what, you know, there's a massive change here now. But I think little things like that, you know, it really keeps you going in that, wow, you know, me getting better is, it's having a nice impact on other people as well. And I think, like you said earlier, taking it away from it just being about the food, you know, rather than like, you've had this food, that's amazing. It's just, you know, it's more, oh, well, I've had this, and I, you know, rather than me thinking, oh my God, how many calories is in this, and, you know, what, how much weight am I going to gain from it? I've eaten it, and now I'm engaging in a game with you, and like, I'm just kind of enjoying time with my family, rather than being, you know, totally absorbed by the eating disorder all the time.
And I think as well, on that, Hannah, like, the post meal thing is really, really important. Mm. So, you know, there is more food on Christmas Day. Now we can dial it all down, you know, and I think that can be really helpful for somebody. But really important that we're not sitting at the dining table 2 hours later, you know, that we eat and we just change the scene and we move away from the food. I think that can be really, really important. And, you know, distractions are great, like a board game,
charade,
yeah, movie marathon, whatever. Just something, and, you know, something small again, like if somebody is eating a Christmas meal or eating a bit more than maybe they might normally, maybe they need a hot water bottle, maybe they're feeling really, really bloated, so that kind of stuff can be really, really helpful. And last night, my colleague Susanna works in a residential treatment centre, and she was saying that sometimes what happens, that the clients there will have a couple of rehearsal dinners before they go home. So they'll have a Christmas dinner a few times before they go home, again, just kind of getting used to it and kind of getting comfortable with their fears around it and their anxieties. So again, that could be something that somebody could consider, you know, might be quite the same, but it is all about just trying to manage the anxieties and the emotions that the eating disorder brings up, I think. So the post-meal piece is really important as well.
Yeah. It's kind of an eating disorder tradition, but that sounds really strange to say, but every year now my mum buys me a jigsaw puzzle, and I absolutely love jigsaw puzzles anyway. But honestly, if she ever stops buying me a jigsaw puzzle, you know, when I'm fully recovered and I don't need the distraction of a jigsaw puzzle after dinner anymore, I will be disappointed, because I always do it. I get like 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, and then I aim to finish it by the end of the day. Sometimes I'm up very late, but everybody else is drunk and I'm just there with my jigsaw puzzle, so it's great.
But that's the whole thing about creating new traditions, Hannah. You know,
exactly,
something
yeah.
different.
And they don't have to be like, you don't have to feel like you're missing out on things. No. They can genuinely be really lovely traditions. Just, I think that's the thing. There's such a focus on food and drink at Christmas, and it just doesn't need to be like that. I think you know what you were just saying about you know, dialing down the meal. I always just say to myself, when it comes to the Christmas meal, realistically, it is just, I mean, whether you're vegetarian, I'm vegetarian, so I have like the roast corn thing, but it's literally a bit of meat, some potatoes and some vegetables. Like, that is a very standard meal. Yeah. And then you might have some of the extra trimmings, you know, if you fancy it, but it doesn't need to be, you know. I think society and diet culture have really made the Christmas dinner a massive thing, because it tends to be, you know, people will restrict all morning and then they'll have this massive meal, and you don't need to do it like that. And that's not a healthy way to do it either. And that's, you know, it's not healthy for anybody to do, let alone somebody in recovery from an eating disorder. So I think, you know, it can just be a very, very normal day for you to have fun with your family, have a night, or, you know, the people that you love around you, play some games, go for a nice walk. And like you say, it is one day of the year, and I guess celebrations can go on a bit longer than that. But I think there is such this big emphasis on Christmas, and really it doesn't need to be there.
No, and there's also, you know, you mentioned earlier, there's this perception that, you know, it's a perfect day and everybody has a perfect time. I don't think that's realistic or true for anybody. Because, you know, it can be really stressful for everybody. So I think really important that we just kind of the compassion piece and sort of dialing down the pressure, and also being conscious of the pressures after Christmas. So back to your whole diet culture piece, you know, new year, new you. So you're punished for all your indulgence over Christmas. It's just it's really hard. And again, that's really hard for somebody in eating disorder recovery, all the messaging around the need to exercise and all of that, and restrict your food intake to make up, inverted commas, for what you've eaten over Christmas. So that can be really, really difficult. So again, just kind of being conscious of that and how difficult that can be is important too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think being mindful of the messaging and the comments at family gatherings and things like that, that's definitely where I tend to used to have those comments come up the most, and, you know, social media and things like that. So I guess really just checking in with somebody in the days after that. This might sound bad, but what I always try and remember is that most people do about a week of their New Year's resolution and then they give up. So, you know, it's very difficult to be bombarded by that messaging, but sometimes I think it's good to take a break from social media in those times and really focus on yourself. So thank you so much. This has been so helpful. I think people are gonna, you know, absolutely be, you know, storming into this Christmas period thinking, well, it's all gonna be fine, and we don't need to put the pressure on. Where can people go
if you
to
enjoyed
find out
listening
more about
today? You won't
families,
want to miss
I'm
next
sure,
week's
you know,
episode.
Christmas
so
is
be
time
sure
where
to
we
subscribe.
Support, but
eating disorders are crippling illnesses.
Really
with the right support, they can be recovered from.
All the time.
We really hope you enjoyed
we
this
are,
episode.
You,
but if
you we're
require more support right now,
so
please look
website.
Into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.
Video series called Parenting Through Recovery. So. It's a video series we did in collaboration with the US pairing coach, Becky Henry. And we're talking about all the barriers that face parents in terms of accessing support for themselves. So people might also find that useful. It's available to download on the website.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I guess, I mean, we're recording this on the 21st of November, but happy Christmas.
And to you, I hope all the tips about planning ahead will be helpful to you on the day. And I hope you get the jigsaw puzzle completed.
Oh, I hope I get the jigsaw puzzle.
Thanks very much for the opportunity to speak to you, Hannah.
Thank you.